Hey friends, you're listening to the LifeScan Learning Lab edition of the Get Balanced Podcast with me, Dr. Donnie, and my co-host, Chief Todd LeDuc, episode 135.
Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
Hey, welcome back, folks, for another great episode of the LifeScan Learning Live edition of the Get Balanced Podcast with me, Dr. Donnie, and my co-host, Chief Todd LeDuc. And today, Todd, I'll tell you, we have a guest that I don't think there's a firefighter out there that does not know him or have heard of him, read, learned. I'll tell you this, learn from him. How about that? Let me kick it over to you for the intro.
Thanks, Donnie. Again, thrilled to be back doing another episode with you. Hard to believe we've been doing this for over a year, and you're right, we've had some tremendous guests on and real humbled. But today is a real special treat for our listeners and for us, myself personally. I have a guest on today that I'll introduce in a second that I've considered to be not only a friend, but in many ways a mentor. Early in my career, as I was being formulative in my leadership style and as a new chief. So I know we're going to have a great conversation today. Our listeners are in for a special treat. So I'd like to introduce our guest today, which is Chief Billy Goldfeder. So Billy, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule, and it's great to have you on.
Thanks so much. I was smiling when you made your comments, because what I've been able to do is make a lot of screw ups and then teach people don't do what I did. I made a career of that.
Well, you certainly have made an impact on many, and myself being just one. So I'm forever grateful. I thought, and Donnie, you're absolutely right. Most people have run into or heard or read Billy along the way of his career. But I don't know, every time we talk and every time we have a guest on, I always learn something new that I didn't know. So I wonder if we could just start. Donnie reminds me, we have not only listeners from across the United States, but we also have international listeners to the podcast. So maybe if you could you've had a long journey, I guess, in the fire service. It's taken you many different avenues, and I wonder if, let's just start, maybe if you can talk about how you actually got into the service. I know you've got a little Florida in your blood, a little Broward County in your blood as well, but why don't you just talk to our listeners and tell them where that journey has taken you from when you started.
So I don't ever remember not being or not wanting to be a firefighter. When I was a little boy growing up in Long Island, at 4 years old, we had a guy that would come to our house, and he for the real younger people who live in houses now that have floors that require no waxing, back in the day, you would either manually wax your floors or you'd have a company come in once a year and run a waxing machine and wax your floor. So this guy, Dino, from Long Island, where I grew up, would come once a year and wax our floors. So I walked out with him to his car, and he had an old Woody station wagon. I remember it like it was yesterday. And as he's loading up by the way, he would ride me on his waxing machine. There was no lawsuits back then. There was no OSHA back then. He put a 40-year-old kid on this waxing machine and rode me around on the base.
No seatbelt?
No, there was nothing. It was great back then. Lots of freedom. And and so as I walk him out to his car and he loads up the machine, I see a black coat, a black helmet, and a pair of rubber pull-up boots. And I ask him, what is that? And he says, well, I'm a firefighter. I said, but you work on houses. He goes, no, I do both. I'm a volunteer firefighter. And he was with the Commack, New York Fire Department. And that's the best memory I have as far as I got really piqued in my interest. So fast forward into high school. Well, fast forward into public school. I got thrown out of public school because I would leave too much to chase fire trucks. True story. So they sent me to private school in New Jersey. And in Pennington, New Jersey, where my dorm was next to the firehouse, and I proceeded to leave every time the whistle blew. But in private school, if you're paying for your education, you end up getting a graduate degree anyway. So that kind of worked out. Moved to Florida. My folks had a condo down in Broward County. And I went to Broward Community College to go to their fire science program. I worked the midnight shift for the Broward Sheriff's Office. And I joined what then was it's now in Oakland Park. It's the old North Andrews Fire Department. And so I was a member there for a number of years, wanted to move back to Long Island. I did. Went to work for ISO, evaluating fire departments, for about 5 years. And I joined the Manhasset Lakeville Fire Department, which is really where I cut my teeth, and still hold honorary membership there, I guess, if you will, and still feel that's home to me in Long Island. Working for ISO was great, but I really wanted to do this professionally. I could not get on the FDNY. I couldn't pass their eyesight process back then. They didn't have LASIK surgery or any of that, because that was always my dream. And since then, I've been made an honorary battalion chief of FDNY, which is the next best thing, if not better in some cases. But so I started thinking, you know, where do I want to go? What do I want to do? And I saw an opening. Excuse me. I saw an opening for a chief of communications job in Manatee County, Florida, and I applied for that and got it. My background in evaluating communication centers for ISO was what I got me the job there. So I got hired there, and I wasn't there about a minute, and I started looking to see if any of the fire departments had opportunities, and I was hired as the part-time assistant chief for what is now known as the East Manatee Fire District. When I was there, we had a $300,000 budget covering 100 square miles. Now they cover 300 square miles and they have a $13 million budget. So that once I-75 came in, that changed everything. Stayed down there, wanted to get a larger department. I got hired as the director of fire and rescue service for Loudoun County, Virginia, where we really pushed the county through some phenomenal growth. When I started there, we had, probably 1,000 volunteers and maybe 30 career people. And when I left, we had about 500 volunteers and about 200 career people. And now they have about 500 career people. So I've been in a lot of places with a lot of growth. So I was there for a while, till 95. I felt like it was such a big county, and I was doing mostly administrative work. I really missed firefighting, going to fires, making runs. And that county just did not have a lot of activity. So I applied and came out to Ohio. And I've been in Ohio now since 1995. I've been the deputy chief at Loveland Sims since 2000. Prior to that, for 5 years, I was fire chief of a district that was consistent of two communities. One was a city, one was a township, and the city kept annexing the township, and they all got mad at each other. So they broke up the fire district, which was kind of a heartbreak, but, you know, shit happens. And so I was hired at Loveland Sims right next door, and I've been with Loveland Sims since 2000. And my responsibilities there are firefighter safety and health, deputy chief, responding to calls. And I also oversee our community program involving some volunteers. We've got a very vibrant volunteer program there. We were a career department up until, we still are a fully career department. Our volunteers are supplemental and they assist, and it's all community based. So I've done really well. I mean, along the ways, I've been able to hold a number of positions. I've been involved with the IFC. I've been more than blessed to receive some very nice recognitions along the way. And so that's my history. And I'll yield back to you and answer whatever questions you have.
No, that's a great overview. What a journey. It's yeah. Takes to, you know, all walks of the country and in different organizations, and you've done good in each of those roles. But you know, and I think you know what struck me, and Donnie kind of alluded to it, that you know, everyone in the fire service has heard of Billy Goldfeder, but you really have focused on that journey, on giving back in many ways. And I want to touch on just ask you to talk about kind of a couple of them that I think will resonate with our audience and our listeners. One of them is the secret list. Almost, you know, it's probably the worst kept secret in the fire service, because everyone's probably heard of it, but maybe, you know, many probably don't know how that came to be and why it exists, and how, if you're not aware of it, how you can tap into that resource. And then I know you've also worked to help shape the fire service in many ways, but one of them has been you've published some books about mentoring and wisdom and kind of legacy. So I wonder if you could just talk to our listeners about both of those, because and it's true, almost every guest we've had on, and we've had some tremendous colleagues and friends of ours that have come on. It's that wisdom of, as you said, if we all cut our teeth in different ways, but it's giving that knowledge back to those that are coming up. I think that makes the biggest impact. So talk a little bit about the secret list and pass it on, your books that you've really focused on trying to give those that are coming up some life lessons.
We have another book coming up called 30 Fires You Must Know in the 2020s, and I'll share that with you. I'm very excited about that as well, working on that with Frank Lieb from New York City. So when I was a firefighter with Manhasset Lakeville in Long Island, in the period from 1977 to 82, we had several significant line of duty deaths in Long Island. We had some firefighters die in Bethpage at a swimming pool facility, a swimming pool sales company. Chemicals were involved. We had some firefighters get critically burned and pass away in Valley Stream at a synagogue fire. A firefighter killed in Wantagh when the apparatus he was in collided with an aerial ladder that was with struck the back of the aerial. And it really struck me. What struck me then was how, and I mean this with all, Garden City Park, we had a firefighter get killed in a van that was on fire where there was a propane tank in the back. So, and these were all areas right down the block, so to speak, right? And it struck me on how we accepted it as normal. As a young kid, and that means no due respect. We had funerals, we were honorable and all that. But here I am kind of sitting in my own corner, looking at the world through my glasses, wondering why is, I mean, it's just another funeral. And it really struck me. And that I think that's really what sparked my interest in figuring out what's avoidable and what's not avoidable. And so pretty much from the start of my career, I became a lieutenant there, and I moved down to Manatee County, Florida. I was down there for 5 years, my first chief's position there. And I've really taken the responsibility of, one, we got to take care of the public, but we got to take care of ourselves as well. And I just did a piece on that. There's a lot of discussion recently on we need to go in vacant buildings and we don't need to go in vacant buildings. They may be vacant, but there may be homeless people in there, yada, yada, yada. Okay, so it's a good debate going on. The fact is, it's based upon your size up, your conditions, and your resources, and what you have to deal with the emergency, right? And so back into that, and to the safety and health stuff, I realized that a lot of times we were just going willy-nilly into incidents. We were driving like idiots. We were not wearing our masks. We didn't even know what a size up was back then. We didn't have that term. We just went in, right? And we did all that. So I'm glad to have been a part of starting some of that change in what we do. And I'm certainly not alone. I'm part of a large crowd of people who've moved that way. And we still have quite a bit of work to do. We still have firefighters getting killed unnecessarily. And look, I'm the first to tell you, some firefighter deaths are necessary. This is a risky job. There will be times where we absolutely must take risk, but we have to do it based upon our training, the conditions we find, and the amount of time we spend practicing, training, drilling, getting it down pat so we know how to size up. We know how to communicate. We understand building construction. This is not a part-time job. You know, this is not a, I'll show up once in a while and do, you got to be into it. And arguably, I have a distaste for people on this job who are not into it and here just to ride along. And look, some of them may be great firefighters, but if you're not, to me, again, you judge me the way you want. If you're not studying this stuff 24/7, if you're not reading the headlines, if you're not staying up with the most current stuff, if you're not following the UL stuff as much as listening to people who've been on the job for 50 years, then you're not doing anybody a favor and you're probably in the way. So that's kind of how I feel. And that's what really sparked my interest in the safety and health stuff. So giving back and all that. So I was adopted, but I was raised by my mom and dad. In other words, I don't know who the woman was who had me. I was I was born in Chicago. I was born in the old Cook County Hospital in the unwed mother's ward. True story. And the retired fire commissioner of Chicago, Jose Santiago, him and I were talking a couple years ago. Turns out we were born in the same ward a few weeks apart. And he also was adopted as well. So I can't tell you about my genetic background, but I can tell you about Joyce and Sam Goldfeder, who adopted me and raised me. And it's about giving back. And I think that's where that got into my DNA. And I think it really has to be who you are. If you're not, in other words, I think it's organic. I think we all have personalities. We all have things that are important to us. And yes, like our books, the book series, Pass It On. We raised tens of thousands of dollars for National Fallen Firefighters, the Chief Ray Downey Scholarship, and the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, right? Who knew I was going to get cancer and benefit from that? You never know, right? So I think that as long as you can sustain a decent life, then what do you do with the rest of it is probably a way I look at it. Not everybody thinks that way. I got friends who do the same stuff I do, who write books, who do seminars and all that, and they're about every nickel and every dime, and it doesn't make them bad. It just makes them who they are, and that's fine. They're giving back in their way, and my way, though, is not only to convey the message in every way we can through social media, through Firefighter Close Calls, Secret List, and I'll tell you about that in a minute, through seminars, but through the books. And when I reached out to the folks that helped do those books, because basically, as the late Harry Carter said, I wrote 3 books, but had 100 of my best friends write each of them for me. I mean, basically that's sort of true, but I did do a little bit of work. And it's a chance to, you know, share. So where did those books come from, really? So I was on a plane and I was reading Esquire magazine, and Esquire every month has a column, What I Know. And it happened to be Robert De Niro's column. And I'm reading this and I'm thinking, you know what? Here's this guy sharing what he knows in life. And I said, that might be an idea for a book, because fire engineering and good folks who've been asking me for several years, hey, consider writing a book. And I'm thinking, do you need another book on how to stretch a hose line? Do you really need another book on how to put a hole in a roof? I don't know. And I'm not that guy, you know. That's pretty routine in my world, and I don't know that I could teach any of these young people that I work with any more about how the great job they do in putting a hole in a roof or working a hearse tool. I mean, I haven't worked a hearse tool since the 80s, and I wouldn't know what to do with it, right? But what I do know is commanding fires, fires in the suburban environment, which has really been my forte. Maybe what I can do is share not only what I know, but more importantly, my Rolodex. Now, for the young folks on this, a Rolodex is an old thing we used to keep business cards in and people's names. But in other words, I've been very blessed due to, I guess, my personality and the positions I've been able to be in. I know a lot of people. I tell my firefighters when they're traveling, you tell me the town when you're going there and I'll get you connected. And I'm very lucky that way. So I figured, what do I do with that? And I knew all these people. And I said, you know what? This is what we're going to do. We're going to write this book. I'm going to ask them if you had 1,000 words to share the most important stories or wisdom with our readers, what would you do? And that's where Pass It On 1, 2, and 3 came from. And the new book, 30 Fires You Must Know, came from Frank Lieb and I. Frank's the chief of training in New York City, talking quite a bit as friends and curious, how come this firefighter doesn't know about that fire. How do they not know what Hackensack means? How do they not know what Vandalia Avenue means? And we're like, whoa, wait a minute, because it's not being taught. It's not being passed along, right? So we're in the process of this book. It should be out in 2023. And what we did is we reached out to people who were at those fires, and they're going to tell that story. We're going to provide a lesson plan. I'm going to provide commentary. Frank's going to provide commentary. And I think the coolest part, which shows you that I'm really a millennial in disguise, is that at the end of each chapter of our book, you'll take your phone and there's a QR code and you'll be able to download videos from that fire, reports from that fire. So I'm like really modern and stuff because I know about these things. So that's kind of... That's kind of the I don't know if I covered everything you asked me, but you asked me about my why I give back, and one, because it feels really good when I'll have a firefighter come up to me and say, hey, I read this chapter, I read this story, we didn't do this, we did this instead. That's a big deal. And and the story behind the secret list, where it came from.
So. I love it. I love it. In you know, you talk about impacting, you know, future generations. You know, that certainly is an understatement with the amount of investment that you've put into developing others. So we're going to look forward. We've had Frank on as a guest on the podcast, and it's going to be a special treat to look forward to seeing you both publish those lessons, really, because it would be a shame if they were lost. And not passed on. So,
and Todd, real quick too, those will not be fires from 100 years ago. These are fires in this, you know, within the last 10, 20, 30 years, the max, right? And also the secret list got started. I guess I didn't say that. Why? I got a computer in like 96, 97 and discovered that you can do more than just search for things on it. Wink, wink. So what I did was, I started searching fires and rescues. And as I read these stories, I would share them with people and on and on and on. And this guy would say, hey, I saw you posted that. Can you add me to your list? And this one would write me, and it just sort of grew. One day I discovered if you put the recipients in brackets on AOL, they would be BCC'd. It would be blind carbon copy. So somebody asked me one day, who's on your list? And I said, it's a secret. I don't know. I just was just joking. And then some after that, I would start. And that's where it came from.
I love that. And for some of our listeners out there, Billy, what's AOL?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's Americans Online, and there's very few Americans Online on that anymore.
And what's carbon paper?
Right here. Yeah. Or Rolodex, right? Yeah.
So we're all dating ourselves.
That's where it got started, and it grew into, again, we've had some pretty wild offers to buy it, to buy Firefighter Close Calls, which is my partnership with Gordon Graham. But all the folks involved in Firefighter Close Calls and the secret list are all volunteer. Nobody's making a nickel. Gordon pays the bills, and that allows us to say and do whatever we want without worrying about advertisers or anything like that. We've been sued once, we won, because we say what we want to say. And we are rarely wrong. And I don't mean that from an ego standpoint. What I mean is that we spend a lot of time making sure what we put out there is factual. And so we're pretty proud of that. We have easily several hundred thousand people on the secret list around the world. And firefightercloscalls.com gets crazy amounts of hits, but you won't see a single advertisement on there. And as long as we're able to make a good living on what we do, working at the fire department and the other things we do, then we'll keep giving it out. That's it.
I love it. Love it. So our listeners out there, if you're not already partaking in the secret list, firefightercloscall.com, sign up. It's a great resource, a great tool. And Billy, you know, one thing I love about you is you have no filters. You just call it like it is, and you know, call balls and strikes as you see them.
And that's why my resume is relatively longer than most. I've worked at a few places.
I love it. But it, I mean, it's so important when we're talking about, you know, issues of you know, critical, you know, to survival. I mean, you can't sugarcoat. You can't put, you know, sugar on things that need to just get them on the table. So check out the resources. Yeah, Donnie.
Hey, yes, because I have to capitalize on Billy's no filter. Because I want to shift it just a little bit to that health and wellness component. And Billy, my whole, you know, my work is work-life balance, but with work-life balance, it's with my research, it was about, we need to put our health and wellness first, our physical health, mental health, social and spiritual health. And the models that in my research came out is that if we put that first and make that as a priority, our careers and our family life do much better if we take care of ourselves. So with the health and wellness where we're at in the fire service, as well as, you know, divorce rate and, you know, all the other things, without the filter, you know, I guess, can we do this? Can we do a job to where we can be both successful or have, as you said, a decent life? Can we have both a great career? Actually, all three: a great career, great health, and a great family life.
Well, the answer is yes. It's just how much you want to do it. You know, I have something I call God's joke, and my wife corrects me, and she says it's God's challenge. She says, because I don't think God jokes. So I think he does, because we have senses of humor, but that's for another subject, another discussion. So what I call God's joke is this, that he gives us our careers, our relationships, and children all at the same time when we're woefully unqualified to deal with any of it. We're too young. We don't understand. So, you know, I mean, what I know at age 67 now, if I only knew that back then, you know, I'd have done things differently. So the challenge is for people like yourself and Todd and others who are really focused on the health and wellness is to try and drive that into the younger folks. Now, with that said, I think this generation is definitely more focused, and maybe even the generation before that. My generation was drinking, smoking, obesity. I mean, just how it was, you know. Now, I was never a drinker. I was never a smoker, but boy, I loved to eat. And, you know, I've been challenged with weight issues most of my career. Now, the last couple of years are not cancer related, but the last couple of years I've been able to focus pretty well. And that's because I got grandkids and I feel a responsibility to be around for those kids as long as I can. So, but again, that didn't happen because I read some article. That happened because that's how I felt it here. So again, or I think a lot of this is who you really are. But if you're not who you are, if that's not who you are, folks like you and Todd and others can help steer us in that direction and help us realize what's important. But as I said, back with God's challenge or God's joke, in your 20s, you don't know what the hell's going on. You know, you're taking as it comes. You know, what's 12 Twinkies at night with a bag of White Castles? You know, we didn't even think about that stuff. So as you get older, you get wiser. I just wish we had the wisdom when we were younger. I know, speaking for myself, I certainly wish I did.
You know, it reminds me, and Billy, you probably have heard him say it, and rest his soul. I still remember Jim Page doing a keynote at, I think it was EMS Today conference or GEMS conference. And, you know, he was talking about, he knows many, many folks in our profession that are professionally successful. He knows many, many folks that were personally successful, but made the comment that always stuck with me, that knew very few that had both. And you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, Donnie, you're doing so much work to kind of help us and train folks like myself and Billy and others around the country to find that sweet spot and know that it's all interconnected. So, but certainly some of that comes with age and wisdom as well. But, you know, for our listeners, you know, out there, you know, it's important.
So before I had kids, kid calls didn't bother me. And then I had kids, you know, so you evolve a little bit. Right. I did I guess it was a podcast when firehouse.com started in the 90s or early 2000s. Dave Iannone started that, and they asked me to do what was one of the first programs called Through the Smoke. And I had a lot of fun doing that. And one of the programs I talked about that the importance of who's in your wallet. And now we say who's in your cell phone. But look in your locker, look in your wallet, and look in your phone. And whoever's pictures are in there, that's the people you're reporting to. And that's who needs you to be around. And you already put those pictures in there, so obviously you care about them. And so that's kind of a good focus. That the problem is when we're younger, we live forever. And when we get older, we become much more vulnerable and understand that things are not guaranteed. And that, again, part of God's joke. I wish you told us that when we were younger, but it's just the way it is. And I do sure. believe, just like you're smiling now, that God is looking down going, watch this. And he puts another couple together and he says, wait, do you see what happens going to here? Right. But I think that's how it works. There's an evolution of us. I just wish when we were younger, we knew some of the things. But we, you know what? We knew them. We didn't take them to heart. We didn't think, oh, yeah, come on. You know, I mean, Donnie and Todd, no kidding. In the late 70s, early 80s, I was going to 50, 60 good working fires a year. Okay. At least once a week, we would catch work. And following the fire, we would blow our nose the day after and the day after to see who had black snots lasting longer, because we were in there, we were doing it, blah, 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 right? The hell did we know? We were growing seeds for cancer in our systems. We didn't know that, right? So anyway, let me yield back to you.
No, and Billy, I think that's a perfect segue, and I know you've alluded to it a couple times in our interview today. I want to ask you about, and you know, some of our listeners may not be aware, you recently had a cancer diagnosis, and you've fought that battle and had started upon that journey. And even with that personal experience, you've found a way to give back to others in perhaps their journey. And this is right, cancer being one of the major elephants in the room for the fire service. But talk a little bit, if you would. I know it's probably difficult, but you've been very open about it. Talk a little bit about your recent diagnosis, and then you started, and I know at LifeScan we've been real proud to partner with you on you started something called 40 Plus Fire Campaign, and talk a little bit about that for our listeners out there, because I'm sure if our listeners, you know, maybe haven't had a diagnosis of cancer, they certainly know a colleague or a family member or friend who has or will at some time.
So I want to clarify one thing that you said. I didn't suffer. I may have suffered a little emotionally, but I was one of the lucky ones. And I remain one of the lucky ones. No pain. Through all the testing, I was put to sleep. I did an article in Firehouse Magazine, if you want to post it as a part of this, because it really does share the story. And I'll send you the link to that. And so those folks watching this can read word for word. So even emotionally, when I guess I got to tell you, so every year that I've gone for a physical in the last couple of years, excuse me, I've kind of expected something. In other words, I'm not being dark. I'm being realistic that at age, you know, I'm in my 60s. This is my 49th year on the job. So something's going to happen, right? They say, when are you going to retire? I said, well, when I start drooling during my conversations, probably an indicator, right? So, because I love what I do. And thankfully, where I'm at, there's no forced retirement as long as I can pass physicals. And I love what I do. And I love working with our young people. So I'm blessed. But so when we talk about this, I always mention and just say a thought, a prayer for those who are going through chemo, who've lost parts of their bodies, who continue to fight the battle, because I'm one of the lucky ones. So far, so good. So anyway, so I went for my physical, annual physical pre-COVID. They started to see my PSA go up a little bit. We said, we'll keep an eye on it. We'll look at it next year, 6 months, whatever. They were not at all concerned. Well, COVID came, so I skipped 1 year of a physical. And then the year after, I went and got it. And it was up, it was elevated a little bit more. My doctor said, you know what? Let's get you to a urologist. Let's get it checked. And at no point, and I swear, I was scared. I was not worried. And I can't explain that. Believe me, there's shit that scares me. And I mean, my wife, for example, you know, scares the hell out of me. But It did not. It was not. Oh my God! And in my mind, I remembered years ago, someone saying that they got diagnosed, and one person said they were involved. They were, the thought process was, why me? Why me? And the other person said, why not you? And that really stuck. So I went into it like, yeah, why not me? What the hell? Why am I so special that I wouldn't get cancer? Especially doing a lot of the things we did. Even with great behavior on the fire ground today, you're still exposed, right? Okay. So I went, the urologist, Cincinnati Urology Group, phenomenal. About 30 doctors, about 300 staff. That's all they do is check that stuff we're talking about, right? And they did a lot of tests, everything from scans to this to that. And they said, yeah, you've got prostate cancer. And they said it's pretty aggressive. So what does that mean? So they taught me something called a Gleason score. Now, most of us know, you hear about cancers being stages. Stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four. And that's where your cancer is right now, today. Where does it sit? Okay. Well, the Gleason score in relation to prostate cancer is how fast is your cancer moving? What's the aggressiveness of it? So zero is great. Anything from six below is good. 10 is, as one person said, 10 is a death sentence. And I was 9.5. So that I raised my eyebrows, just like you, I raised my eyebrows. I said, all right, so what do we do? And again, I still wasn't scared because I guess part of the reason for not being scared is I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel any pain. I wasn't peeing uncontrollably. My glove test, when they stick the finger up, my prostate was normal. So I felt nothing. So it didn't make it, it almost didn't process, right? So they gave me the choice. Do you want radiation or do you want surgery? Well, going into it, I did not want surgery, but based upon talking to people, other friends, maybe we'll do this, we'll do that, whatever. But surgery, nah. Well, I reached out to the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, who I've been involved with for years, well before I became a cancer person, and or a person with cancer. I was hooked up with Mike Dubron, who's a dear, an old friend of mine, and Mike is the founder, and he became my mentor. And he walked me and my wife, Terry, through a very interesting process that helped us decide whether we wanted to have surgery or we wanted to have the radiation. And again, I wanted radiation to start with, but for reasons that if somebody wants to reach out, I'll share it with you. But basically, the radiation, if they do that and then you need surgery after, it's a much more complicated surgery. But if they do the surgery, you can still get radiation after if there's some spread issues with less complication. That's kind of what helped me make the decision. And also there was a little bit of it. I talked to some other firefighters around my age who had prostate cancer, and most of them, not all, but most of them went with the surgery because it's done with. Now let's make the connection to our personalities as firefighters. We size up a situation. We identify how we need to fix it. We fix it and we never want to rekindle. I'm that way in the fire department. I'm that way in my life with my kids. Let's fix the problem. Let's move on. Part of that, my dad, and I love my dad dearly, but when we'd have a fight, it would last for weeks. He would never get over it quickly. And I wonder if that has something to do with maybe who I am and the way I behave. And that is the fact that I see a problem, let's deal with it right now, and I don't want to revisit it. Now, my wife, Terry, she needs a few weeks to think about how pissed off she is at me. So it doesn't always work perfectly that way. But my point is that I looked at this, let's fix it right now. Okay. Now, a lot of you are thinking, what about sexual function? What about pissing your pants and all that stuff? Yeah, that's part of prostate cancer. So I went in, got the surgery, and I'll get back to the other stuff in a minute. Had the surgery. Was successful. Now, tomorrow I actually go back for my, yesterday I gave every 90 days I have to, get blood tested now. And that pretty much going to be for a long time because of my Gleason score being so high. They're very concerned that because I am at high risk for more cancer. So I went yesterday and tomorrow I go, and I feel like the doctor's going to say, hey, you're doing great. The numbers continue to look great, but If not, we'll deal with it. So I was in the hospital for, it was one day, one overnight and home. I had a bag attached to me to control my peeing for a week, a catheter. They took it out a week later. Again, you're not hearing anything about pain anywhere. Now, my wife tells me that the week after surgery, because I was still kind of goofy from the anesthesia, because I was out for like 8 hours. They said that that will impact you for a while. And it, so she says there was definitely pain in that week after, but I don't remember any of it because I guess they gave me the drugs and she gave me whatever I needed to get, right? And then I was home for 30 days, no lifting, and I don't lift a whole lot anyway. I usually get people to do that shit for me. So it wasn't a real concern. And then recuperation. A week after the surgery, I was walking a mile a day. And that's generally what Terry and I do. We try to walk every day. Was I peeing uncontrollably? Not really. So they make you wear a diaper for a while because you're not going to be able to control it if you cough, if you laugh, things like that. So that was probably for about 2 months I wore a diaper. And there was a couple of oopses in there, but that's why they give it to you, right? I mean, and I'm being blunt, they're messing with your plumbing. So things change, right? And so then after that, I started to wear a pad, and now I don't have to wear anything. I mean, I wear underwear and shit, but, you know, I don't have to wear anything to control any of that stuff. I feel great. I feel great. It's under control. And again, I tell people I'm as good as my next blood test. And I anticipate living a good, full, long life and being around for my grandkids and all the other stuff that I like to do, right? So as part of that, so and I'll just go right into what Todd talked about. And as you can see, I'm blessed with a personality that I don't have a whole lot of filter. And I tell people how I feel. And in 2022, I try to be a little bit more respectful because you have to or you go to jail or something. But I so much of the world is so filled with filter and people not being blunt and honest with each other. And I think it'd be a lot easier if we just, you know, not in a mean way, but just say how you feel, talk to me. Right. And so I thought, what can I do? I'm very, very fortunate. I've had an amazing, successful career. And from a national standpoint, I have numerous ways to share my message. And when I share my message, I know that people are listening and not always liking what I say. I get it. You know, I get people who write me and tell me I'm full of shit on this tactical idea or we should have done this, whatever. That's great. You know, there is a reason why firefighterclosecalls.com has no chat room because we don't care what you think. Right. Just kidding. But I said to a friend of mine, I had prostate cancer, and he said, did they find it when you went for a colonoscopy? And that struck me because one has nothing to do with the other. And that made me think, whoa, I didn't know before this. He didn't know. They probably don't know because nobody wants to talk about cancer. And nobody really wants to talk about cancer that can affect your peeing or your sexual function or any of that. So I figure, well, then I need to talk about it. And I need to share the story. And while I'm not really into talking about pee, I'll talk about sex all day long. So it was another opportunity, right? So the peeing part, as I said, I'm under control. Some have it worse. Some have it as good as I did. It depends on who you are. It depends on your surgeon, your doctor, all that stuff, right? Sexual function is not what it was. I'm not the sexual dynamo that I was and obviously a reputation for, but it's getting better. And it feels good and all that stuff. And if you need more information, you can shoot me an email. You can write to the folks at LifeScan. Todd can reach out to me and I'll be glad to share any of this in a much more, even more in-depth discussion with anybody who'd like to. So giving it back, when I realized people were not aware of what was going on, I wanted to start a website. And I was going to do it on a section of Firefighter Close Calls, But what also clicked was this. When I went to the urologist, and they do a rotation of who meets with new patients, the CEO of the company happened to be my doctor that day. So that was kind of cool. And I met with him, and we hit it off really well. And I told him I'm a firefighter. So that's cool. I said, well, you're aware of our cancer issue. He goes, no. And that was another aha moment. He had, and he'd seen numerous firefighters, but he never made the connection. So I said, this is what we need to do. So 40 is your age as a firefighter. At that stage and above, you need to start checking for cancers. Okay. And certainly you and Todd and his group can tell people how to get that done in some really great ways through LifeScan Wellness and many other programs that are there. So I just sat down at the computer and started writing down the things that I would want people to know. And that's how we started www.40, the number four, the number zero plus fire.com. And it's a very simple website. I reached out to Dr. Mike Hamrock in Boston. He was a firefighter. He's now their department physician. And Mike has a letter that he's created to give doctors from one doctor to another about this firefighter's cancer. Speak their language, right? I then decided, you know, we needed a logo. So I reached out to somebody to work on a logo. And then I needed somebody to pay for the logo, because I had some copay challenges. I just didn't have a lot of free cash right then and there. And I said, this could be a really good opportunity though for a business, because I was going to do the logo either way. If I could pawn it off on some sucker that wants to pay for this stuff, why not do that? So Todd walked past me and I go, well, there's a sucker. So, so I reached out on a serious note. Todd was well aware of my cancer and what I was dealing with. He had offered me, if LifeScan can help, meaning can we help you with your testing or any of that? And I was already diagnosed at that stage. And I said, look, your company of all the ones I'm aware of is the most aggressive in the fire service as far as helping firefighters stay healthy. I said, you know, this could be an opportunity for your business. And I had other businesses that in mind that maybe, you know, maybe we're not directly into it like Todd's group is, but they really are into it. I mean, it's all about life, right? And he spoke to his folks and they became the sole sponsor of that sticker. And people can go to 40plusfire.com. You can download information for your doctor, and it's all in plain English. I don't know many big words. It's all simple, basic stuff. And so the most rural firefighter with no high school training can read and understand it in there. And I'm serious. And the most, you know, a guy with a PhD can understand what we put in there. But the whole idea behind it is just to educate firefighters on it, to share my story. But most importantly, what if you're diagnosed? What you need to do. And it tells you the whole story in there. So that's where 40 Plus Fire came from. I will tell you this, and I can't thank Todd and the folks there enough, but I thought Todd was going to have some firm manage the distribution of the decals and the stickers. Todd and his wife mail every single one. And it's been, I think it's over 10,000 now. There you go. Like, it's a lot. So I really appreciate what they've done. And matter of fact, he just got a new batch in. So I put a posting up and he got slammed with requests. And so he wrote me the other day, can you hold off talking about it for a while?
I cried uncle. I got to give a shout out to my lovely wife who, you know, it's actually, Billy, it's become a labor of love, right? Because, you know, listen, I mean, you've lived it. But I think the numbers, 40% of general population are going to be afflicted by cancer at some point in their life. And in firefighters, we know, you know, are higher than that. So it's become, even though I've been fortunate not to, you know, have a cancer diagnosis, it's become, it's real and it's personal, I think, to any firefighter that's out there. And certainly if you're not battling it today, like Billy said, I mean, at some point it likely is going to catch up to you. So the one thing I know, and I know you know, and the whole 40 plus campaign is about is, given that harsh reality, the sooner we detect it, the better the outcome. So, you know, departments out there that maybe aren't doing annual physicals, or you need to really reevaluate that. Bill, you've heard me say it, and Donnie has heard me say it ad nauseum, but I mean, we would never think of putting firefighters, I would hope, into an apparatus with bald tires, faulty brakes, no windshield wipers. And it's really the same with our bodies, right? We need to have that preventative maintenance and early detection. So I want to thank you for sharing your story, and you always do it so candidly, and also for elevating this issue around the fire service, because it's one that we need to be talking about more, and we need to be looking at how do we tackle this so we don't continue to lose members.
Everyone, and this very brief comment, because I know we're starting to run out of time and I don't want to overly dominate this, but every one of us have been on an EMS run where it turned out bad because they didn't call us quick enough. And we've all said, you should have called us quicker. Call us next time. We're the biggest advocates to quickly call, but we're the worst at when we need to take care of ourselves, right? Oh, I Gary Ludwig at the IFC started a campaign. If you don't feel well, don't make it your last call, right? But yet, almost monthly, we hear of a firefighter didn't feel well and laid down and died in bed, right? Or maybe you're peeing a little bit of blood and you write it off, or you go potty and you have some blood, or you got to get checked. But don't wait for that, because unfortunately, it's sometimes too late. I mean, I have a dear friend of mine, Lee Strickland, who never went for a physical. He was an active firefighter. He bullshitted his way through all the physicals. He got diagnosed one day and he died 3 months later. The cancer was all over his body. So you don't want to go to the doctor. You don't want to have him put the gloved hand up your ass. You don't want to do all that stuff, but you don't understand what follows if you don't do that stuff. So think of the people whose pictures are in your wallet, whose pictures are in your phone. Listen to what Todd and Donnie are telling you. And you know what? you go and get checked. And the best part is, statistically, if you do get checked, you get it ahead of time. It's a good visit. It worked out. It's when it's too late and things start showing up, then you're like, oh my God, I wish I had gone sooner.
Yeah, for sure. Some great, some truisms, right? I mean, that's the name of the game. Unfortunately, you know, it's likely not a matter of if, but when, and being on top of it is the key. You know, Billy, we've had, a great interview. I appreciate being so candid. I want to be mindful of time. I know we'll try to corral you for version 2.0 and have you back on. But I want to ask you, and this is probably a loaded question, and you've touched on a number of different areas, I think, that would speak to it. But I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit for our listeners out there. You know, a lot of folks that listen to the podcast are relatively new to the service. They're coming up, or maybe not even in the service, but they're thinking of, do they want to give their community service by, you know, supporting the fire department and getting into the service? In all your journey that you've 40 some odd years, and not just fire service journey, but personal journey as well, or some combination of both, if you had to pick, I guess, one pearl of wisdom to impart to our listeners out there, what would that be?
I got a string of pearls, but we don't have time.
I knew that. I knew you did.
Yeah. So In my last book, I wrote a part in there that says the best advice I never got. The best advice I never got is don't do what you're not qualified to do. And I'm speaking more so to the firefighters who are going to become officers or those who are officers. In this day and age, communication is a big deal. And we are preaching, when you have mental health issues, when you have emotional issues, to talk it out, talk to each other, find out what's going on, okay? My advice is this: listen and then refer them to the right qualified individuals. My point is that many years ago in my career, I had a firefighter come to me about a relationship issue, and I provided my advice. And that firefighter later on blamed me for their marital issues because of the advice I provided. Back then, we provided advice with no worry about that. But I guess the world was starting to change. I was being genuine from my heart. I was trying to help somebody, and it ended up biting me in the ass. It worked out. Everything's great. I've had a great career, and I continue to. But it was a moment of, my God, man, here I thought I was trying to help you. And it turns right around and smacked me in the ass with this thing, right? So my advice is this. When you're dealing with a firefighter with a behavioral issue, whether it's an emotional issue, whether it's a behavioral issue, follow your department procedures. Follow your policies. If you don't have policies, get some policies. Identify how you want every one of your lieutenants, captains, and chiefs to handle the similar problems. Don't leave it up to them. So my point is, if a firefighter comes to you and says, hey, Billy, can I talk to you? I said, sure, of course. I always have time. What's going on? Well, my wife and I, and you listen and say, you know what? In my day, I'd have given advice, but you can't do that anymore. You need to say, listen, I do care, but here's some options for you. You can go see Chaplain Jones. You can go to EAP, et cetera. And I want you, and those listening right now, I want you to think of it as this. You're on the first new engine company. You've got a hazmat incident. You're not a hazmat company. So you stabilize the situation, and then you bring in the professionals, the hazmat team, okay? That's the same way when you as an officer are approached with somebody with a non-firefighting type challenge. Listen, be caring, and then call in the hazmat team. Refer them to the right people. You may have all your certifications in fire, command, all that, but if you don't have a certification that says you're a counselor or a certification says you're a psychiatrist, a psychologist, then don't travel down that road. You can't start an IV if you're not a paramedic, and you cannot provide professional advice related to personnel issues without referring them to the right people. That's my advice. Do what you're trained and qualified to do. Otherwise, in a warm, respectful, and caring way, get them to the right resource. Big deal.
Great, great, great wisdom. Kind of stay in your lane, is definitely.
Absolutely.
Billy, I want to thank you. Tremendous interview today. You've imparted quite a lot of lessons for our listeners, and thank you for all you've done for the fire service and continue to do. And thanks for being who you are. You're privileged to call you a friend. And our listeners out there, we've had Billy 1-0, and stay tuned. We'll be looking at corral him to get back on, because he's only scratched the surface. But check out the resources that we've talked about, Firefighter Close Call, Pass It On, and we'll be looking for you and Frank's new book out on the horizon. So keep up the great work, and thanks for joining us today.
The job has given me far more than I've given back, and I love it. Thanks for having me, Todd, and I appreciate your friendship, and Donnie, you as well. Thanks for having me, everybody.
Thank you.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.